Good afternoon, Streeter Township High School. This is Mr. Randolph coming to you from the podcast studio, room number 340 in Streeter Township High School. And this is Just Another Movie Podcast. As I said before, my name is Mr. Randolph, and to my right I have...
Kieran Cassidy.
Xavier Dean.
Eric Granados.
Nathan Beck.
Nathaniel Harkar.
All right, very good, ladies and gentlemen. And we are going to be talking about the movie The Sandlot today. The Sandlot. And here's one of the classic songs that came out of this movie. It's Green Onions. I don't know if you guys heard this. We'll talk about this more later, but I love this song. Booker T and the MGs. I don't know, for me, this is summer grooving music right here.
Yep. It's supposed to capture a time period.
It really does.
It's just capturing the popular culture of the time period. And it captures it well, of course. Definitely, it's a perfect reflection of the style of the time period, popular music.
And it for sure sets the mood for the rest of the movie, too.
It really does. Yeah, it really does. Now, granted, that particular song, while we'll get to that later on, definitely, and I might as well go ahead and put this out to everybody in our audience as well. We're going to work on getting a little more formalized, a little more structured in how we're going to do our podcast here, just so that in the future, I think things have been going well. I like the way things have been going. I think that maybe things will flow a little better if we have some more structure with the podcast, and that way you, the audience, also knows what to expect from time to time. You know, the first 10 minutes or 15 minutes of the podcast, we're talking about the actual movie itself, the genre of the movie, that sort of thing, and then we'll talk about the acting and the actors and second part is more genre than the first part, because we're going to talk about the movie in depth. And then the third part of the podcast, we'll cover music, because obviously we've got some passionate individuals when it comes to music here on the podcast. So, yes, Nate raises his hand. Yes. And there's nothing wrong with that. I love the fact that we are all, I think, music aficionados in our own way and in our own styles. And so I think it's great. And I think that we have a lot to offer, definitely. But so today... The, I would dare say, classic movie, The Sandlot. That's just my own personal opinion, but what do you guys think? Would you call this a classic, or is this just a kid's film?
I certainly think it's become a classic among certain groups over the years. I know all of my friends adore this movie. They make tons of shirts, you know, with the tagline,
"You're killing me, Smalls."
Exactly. Yeah. So it's definitely become a classic for a lot of people.
Okay. What about the rest of you? What do you think?
I don't know if I would say it's particularly a classic yet. I'd say it's on the cusp of becoming one. It's very close, as close to a classic as you're going to get, because it's in that weird gray area where some people are really crazy about it and some people are kind of eh about it. So it's almost there. It depends on – it's based on basically perspective and opinion at this point.
Okay. What do we? What turned up?
The advertisement claim.
Oh, the advertisement.
We can't
claim.
Be having no, advertisements.
No, I mean, there's
here.
No.
They're not going to pay us. We can't show their advertisement.
There's no worry about that. nobody could hear it. Anyway, all right, I apologize, Nate. And thank you, Nate. I appreciate that.
Oh, this is going to be confusing.
Here's an interesting little tidbit. Ladies and gentlemen, this film came out in 1993, and that makes it almost 30 years old. If that doesn't make it close to a classic because we're still watching it and enjoying it today, I don't know what defines a classic, I guess, you know? I mean, it is a kid's film, and it's a kid's film in the sense that, well, number one, there are
kids.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's about kids. But it's also a kid's film in the fact that I think everybody at some point in time goes through what our main character goes through. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Well, for most of the movie, yeah.
For most of the movie? Why do you say that?
Well, because the carnival scene in the movie, I've never taken part in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. No, I would imagine you've never, you know, had smokeless tobacco and then gone on a, you know, what was that called? The Whizzer or something like that?
Now here's what I'm thinking about this. I think this is definitely targeted towards the audience of people who are actually from that time period. Because that was way more commonplace back in the mid-1900s, you'd say. Because those people would have been older by now. And they would have been kids back in the mid-1900s. So when that movie came out in 95, you would have had adults.
93.
Oh, 93, my bad. When it came out in 93, you would have all these adults going to watch the show and reminiscing over their childhood back in the mid-1900s.
Which, yes, I would agree that to a certain amount that you are not wrong on that. I think that... it's set. When would you guys guess that it was set? In what would be your guess?
Early 1960s, late 1950s.
Based on the music, definitely probably 60s.
Yeah,
I'm
saying 60s.
What do you think, Eric?
I'd agree too.
You'd agree too?
Because it's almost getting into that kind of rock and roll style, but it's not exactly 70s yet.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I would agree with that. It's actually set in 1962, the summer of.
Right.
Yep, 1962.
Lots of good things happened in 1962.
Like what?
Well, that, like the setting of the movie, the...
Why, yes, you're right.
Yeah. I think you're thinking of back in the December of 63 from the Four Seasons.
No.
Remember that?
But another big thing that happened around that time was the major boom of the comic book industry, especially for Marvel.
That is true. It did start to take off right at that time. It had its first true renaissance.
Yeah.
Right about then, because heading into the 70s, it was on the decline somewhat. And then in the 80s again, it had its another really big renaissance.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. No, I would agree with that, definitely. It's interesting to me that this film has all of the stereotypical characters that you would have in a kid's film, too. You know, you've got the chubby kid. You've got the super sporty kid. You've got the kid who looks like a nerd but is kind of just weird, you know? I mean, what was his name? Squints, know, which, by the way, Squints is my hero. Going after Wendy Peppercorn like he did.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that took some.
That's a whole discussion. That's fun.
Well, let's talk about it. We're here.
That's one heck of a moment. He had some cojones to do that.
I can't disagree. I mean, everybody wants to make out with the hot lifeguard when they're a kid.
He's been planning it too.
He did.
Yeah. He had a scheme. He was a mastermind. He had a scheme and everything, and he. He was prepared to go into the deep end, bold, and then there were three whole sets of cojones going on there. Number one, he planned it in the first place. Number two, he went into the deep end, even though he probably couldn't. Yeah, he made himself drown.
He couldn't.
And number three, the fact that he went through with it.
he was prepared to die.
He embraced that.
Which, you know what, that's commitment. That is commitment to a plan as a kid because, you know, most kids will get up there and freak out and chicken out. Oh, no, not Squids. Oh, no.
And I absolutely love the smile he gives right before he executes the final stage of the plan.
I know
Nobody
it,
else
right?
notices. No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, that is awesome, too, because, quite frankly, again, who would have even thought? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the best parts about that is by the end of the movie is revealed that it somewhat worked.
Because he ends up marrying Wendy Peppercorn. Yeah.
Nine
and
kids.
Has a few
Nine kids. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Nine children. That's way to go, Squints, right? Yeah.
What type of message were they sending back then? It's like, go marry the old lady. No, it was just interesting, just like the age gap, if you think about that.
Okay, let's think about the age gap. How old do you think those kids were?
12 to 13.
Yeah. She was probably actually not that old. She was probably in her tired late teenager, maybe?
No, she was maybe 15 years old.
You're joking.
No, she was maybe 15 years old.
Lifeguard is a common teenage job to have.
I was a lifeguard all throughout high school, and
I don't trust a 15-year-old with my life.
Well, you know, when you're a little kid, which, you know, is most kids, you know, most swimmers
most kids are little kids.
No, that's not what I was saying. I mean, most people who go swimming in the summer are little kids. You don't get a whole lot of, you know, full-grown adults who do most, I'm just saying, I know as a lifeguard, well, I did see some full-grown adults. There were some hot moms. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Anyway, enough about that.
Keep it PG, Mr. Randolph.
I'm keeping it plenty PG. I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, so back to the kids themselves. Obviously, they had enough to almost have a baseball team, and then they add smalls to the mix. And I found it absolutely amazing how Benny just adopted smalls.
Yeah. You
know? He wasn't like he even thought twice about it. He just took him in, made him one of the group, and that was that. And then everybody had to just kind of roll with it because they all idolized Benny. I don't know. Does that stereotype, like there's always a kind of a leader, does that hold true for groups of kids like that? Is there always kind of that kid that everybody will just do what they say?
No, not necessarily they'll do what they say, but there tends to always be someone who kind of makes a lot of the decisions.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at least in, I mean, they're a little bit of a risque group at sometimes. They're not crazy, but they're a little more risque. Like, with, like a common group of friends, like, there's usually sometimes a guy that likes to, like, they'll be kind of more the leader to, like, the things that they're going to be doing. Mm-hmm. Not like, oh, go jump off that bridge for me real quick, and I'll pay you $100. Not necessarily that. But, yeah, there's sometimes there can be a little bit of that. Whether that's a good thing or not, I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it because I've been in it. Because when I was in grade school, I was in this, like, little group of friends. And there was this one person who was, like, kind of like the leader of, like, our group. And they would always make plans for us and basically just kind of, like, say what we do for, like, the weekend or something.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Because, you know what, I remember there was a kid in my neighborhood when I was growing up, and he was kind of that kid, too, you know. And now, granted, I mean, we didn't get into too much trouble, but, it was still, you know, just, hey, let's follow Chad. That was his name, Chad. So, anyway.
Oh, well, since his name
is
Chad.
Is this an SNL skit?
Since it's Chad, I know, right? It's perfectly fine. Anyone with the name Chad has to be the leader.
Oh, well, of course.
Of course.
You know, by the way, Stuart was never the leader, just so you know.
Because your name's Stuart. I kid, of course, but...
Yes, that's what I was getting at. Thank you, Nathan, for pointing out the obvious.
Chad just feels like a big stereotype. Like, Chad and Stuart feel like just, like, complete... No, the names. They have, like, exact stereotypes. When I say the name Stuart, you know exactly what you're thinking of when you say Stuart. And when you say Chad, you have the image in your head. I'm kind
of
going off.
Chad.
A typical Chad.
So anyway, as I was saying, so back to the movie. But, you know, and it's interesting. I don't know how you guys grew up. Did you have, like, a spot where you would go to play like they did? I mean, obviously baseball was their thing. Baseball, they lived and breathed baseball. Now, I can't relate to that because I was never any good at it. Now, I played Little League when I was a kid, but I stunk at any sport, let alone baseball. But, you know, while I was in it, it was okay. But these kids, obviously, that was their summer. Life was baseball. So, I don't know. What do you think, Karen?
I've never been in that situation because my parents never let me go outside as a child because they were super paranoid. And I was never into sports at all as a kid. I tried them, but I could never get into them.
I see. So, you were a basement kid?
Kind of. I was also an only child, which didn't help me with getting out, so.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I could see that. Yeah. Okay. So you were a summer fungus then.
Yeah. I always wanted to go outside. Trust me, I did, but parents would not let me.
Oh, well. Okay. Fair enough. What about you, Xavier? Did you have that experience or no?
Well, not really, solely because over the summer, it was less I had friends and more I hanged out more with my grandparents and my parents.
Oh, okay. All right. Eric, what about you?
I never actually like had friends when I was a child. I'd usually just stay home, you know, on the Wii playing Super Mario Galaxy or just any classical games back then.
So we were all basement dwellers.
Yeah, I mean, that's excellent. Had like a few.
Well, I mean, I'm still a basement dweller.
Well, yeah. Fair enough.
Like maybe one or two friends like that live near and they come over and we just play games and all.
Okay. Nate, what about you?
I had friends.
get out. just get out the go.
It was a joke. Okay.
Anyway.
I went outside a lot as a kid, but most of my friends that I had did not live in my neighborhood or anywhere close to me. So I was also a pretty independent child. I would just go out and ride my bike wherever.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah.
Wander.
All right.
My life was kind of like that, too. I was fairly independent.
Yeah, okay. Well, whatever, Nate. Anyway. go ahead. I apologize, Nate.
Thanks. Okay. So there were, like, I actually did the baseball. I played baseball a lot with my friends.
So did you?
It would be kind of like that, to where there'd be a specific place where we go. It was always the Southside Diamond, and we'd always go into the Major League Diamond, which is the second biggest one.
Okay.
Yeah, we'd always go into that one. We'd play games. We'd have, we'd divide up the groups, and we'd pick teams and all that and play games.
Gotcha.
We didn't necessarily have a rivalry like they did in that.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting, because the rivalry was like, these were the poor kids, and then the rich kids showed up, you know, with their spotless uniforms. And,
Either like I would be out doing something like that, or playing football at one of the parks or something, or we would, or I'd go to a friend's house, specifically my friend's grandma's house, where they lived at the time, so we'd always go there and chill out in the basement and all that. Or I'd be inside playing video games or doing some little. Those are kind of the things that I did. There were specific places for each thing, kind of.
You know what? As we were kind of talking about this, I kind of forgot, and this will kind of paint my childhood in a little different picture. While I didn't participate very readily in sports, I did have friends of mine and I. We would go out and live action role play in the woods.
Nice. Oh, I would love to do that.
We would be, you know, we had a wizard, we had a barbarian, you know. I always played the ranger. I prefer the ranger character. So, yeah, we would go out and do that in the woods. But anyway.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, we had our own adventures. But back to the Sandlot. I thought it was interesting. Let's talk about the pickle.
Yeah, so...
With the beast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts about... I personally am not afraid of dogs. I've always loved dogs. And this dog, the beast, I actually lived around the corner from an English Mastiff, which is what this dog is. The dog was as big as a lion... and was owned by an English lady, and she was hilarious because the dog, she would beat that dog with a stick, and the dog would ignore her. Gosh. The dog was big enough to just kind of go, meh. So, you know, it was funny. That dog caught me in the alley between my house and their house once, and yeah, I was frightened because I wasn't very big at the time. I was maybe, 100 pounds soaking wet, and this dog easily was 200 pounds. Mm-hmm. So I get it where the fear is, but I've never been really afraid of dogs. But this dog, I don't know. It was kind of interesting. It was an urban legend built up around it, and so it became larger than life. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's the cool part of it, and that's why it's a good storytelling device. Because it's like it portrays how kids see things in a completely different way from adults. Like, adults would just be like, oh, yeah, no, it's just a big old dog. But a lot of times kids will, like, they'll, like, romanticize the idea, and they'll start making little – I remember when I was a kid, We'd pretend that we sometimes like talk about how we think there's ghosts in our closets or something like that, and we'd make whole things about it, and we'd be kind of like afraid. And I remember one time we took tennis rackets and we went to my closet and we got ready to take out the ghost.
With a tennis racket.
Yeah. So it's something.
Well, no, but see, yeah. the thing is this, at that time, as a child,
yeah.
you believe that that would work. And because mm-hmm. you believe that that would work, it would work. Yeah. You know, if there was actually, I believe that's the case, because the power of belief of a child is one of the most powerful things. And so, yeah, the imagination of a child also, I mean, it, and think also, about that story where everybody, it was the magic that their belief, you know, created that kept them away from the boogeyman, so.
And I don't know if they did this, I mean, they seemed to all actually believe it, and sometimes you'd also do it just to mess with your friends just a little bit.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, of course. You do it just to make them scared.
Yeah, it's kind of like that haunted house on the corner in your neighborhood.
Oh, we did that all the time. Yeah,
with the creepy old lady who lived there, you know, who had nothing but cats and that smelled of, you know, pee and everything else, you know. So anyway, but what do you guys think about the Beast ultimately? Do you think he could have made that run chasing Benny the way he did?
Yeah.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I didn't think so.
I thought, agree.
I think that a dog that big, he's good for about 100 yards, and then he's laying down. I mean, because Benny let him all over the neighborhood. I mean, through movie screening, through, you know, food. The minute the dog went by a hot dog stand, he's stopping and chowing. I'm sorry. That's more important than the ball that Benny had in his hand. At least, you know, from a dog standpoint, I would think. But
maybe the dog realized that the ball was signed by Babe Ruth and wanted the ball really bad. He said, "I'm gonna make a fortune off of this."
I think that's what they really wanted you to believe. The dog was an aficionado of baseball, and therefore,
to be fair, it was named after Babe Ruth.
The dog was.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that was what.
Well, James his Earl name Jones. Was Hercules.
Then, wasn't one of Babe Ruth's nicknames?
Well, he was considered to be the Hercules of baseball. Yeah, So yeah, definitely. But yeah, I know I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts about the film just in general?
Great.
Okay, we're gonna need to be a little more specific than that. I mean, because I've been doing the lion's share of the talking here, and I'd like you guys to pipe in some.
I just don't want to say too much so other people can say things.
Thank you, Nate.
I'll cut you off.
Okay, cool. me with the movie. Okay, then. So the movie, I mean, it's not my favorite movie, but I definitely appreciate some of the storytelling in it and that depiction of childhood. I appreciate some of it because it is fairly true. All those, like, those legends you make with your friends, all the going out and hanging out and all that. And the stupid humor that little kids have.
Oh, kid humor is the best.
You play baseball like a girl.
Well, the insult.
What'd you say to me, you little?
Yeah, the insult battle they had with the rich kids. I thought that was hysterical.
Yeah. Sure. So I appreciate the movie. Also, the end of the movie where it talks about what happened to the kids, and it's like, and this faded, and he faded into obscurity. I love that so much. And me and my friends have had that as a joke with us, and we still make that joke. They always say, Nate just faded into obscurity for a little while there. Because sometimes I'll just, like, be busy with my music stuff, and then all of a sudden I'll come back and be like, oh, hey guys, how's it going? How's it going? And then they'll be like, where did you come from? It's like, I've been here the whole time. Well, you fade into obscurity for a while. Yeah.
No, so, that's interesting because I think that any time you watch a movie more than once with a bunch of people, especially your own age, you're going to come up with stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. No, it's absolutely
hilarious. And the you're killing me Smalls thing. I mean, come on. That's just, you're killing me Smalls. That applies everywhere. And so I love that. Okay. But what else? Who else? What do you think? Eric, go.
No, I never like really sat down and watched movies like before the 2000s. So I really didn't know where that reference came from, you know, the Killing Me of Smalls. So when I watched this, I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
So you
said before the 2000s, so movies older?
Yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say, you weren't alive before the 2000s, and so...
Yeah, I know. But like, I never like watched older movies. So.
No, I understand. Why haven't you watched older movies? We're going to have to remedy that.
Have you never seen like Star Wars?
I mean, Star Wars, I've watched, like, now, like, three movies or two.
That counts.
Yeah.
That
it depends on the movie.
Okay. So what was your general impression then?
I mean, I really liked it because the child humor really got to me, and you know, the insult battle and got me in shock. I just really found that funny.
It was, definitely, yeah. And how about the using the erector set to build the elaborate contraption in order to snag the ball out of the beast yard?
That's the type of crap kids will definitely do. That's
they'll spend 3 or 4 days trying to figure that sort of stuff out. Yeah. I mean,
I think one of the best parts about that is the way the movie's hyping that part up specifically is, you know, hey, this might actually have a chance of getting the ball back.
We thought those kids were little geniuses.
They were little geniuses for a second.
They were close to getting the ball, and then they lost it again.
And you know what the interesting thing is, too, and I don't mean to step on anybody, you know, who wants to talk, but I thought that it was cool that they used kind of the Steven Spielberg Jaws sort of idea where you don't show...
The creature
until the very last minute, you know, basically the last, you know, half or the last, you know, 20 minutes of the film. And then it becomes a full-on battle, just like this was. Mm-hmm. But it was the suspense and the anticipation of the creature that really, you know, because you build up in your mind this image of what this dog is going to look like. And, yeah, it's big. I mean, shoot, at the end there, when Smalls gets licked by the dog's head is 2 times bigger than Smalls' head. And so, yeah, it's big, but it's just a dog, you know? It's just a dog. So, yeah. And granted, it might have a slight obsession with baseballs, but kids keep hitting him into the backyard.
A slight obsession?
Well, he had like, what, 20 or 30 balls or
125.
Was it 125?
I'm pretty sure it was 125.
Okay, so you counted or?
No, I thought they mentioned it in the beginning of the movie that
You know, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Like you said, he's a baseball aficionado.
Yeah.
And what he was doing was he was waiting to find a signature again, and he finally found it.
Ball.
It was the climax of his whole life. That's what he's been doing the whole time. He's been just,
waiting for some kid to screw up and hit his stepdad's ball over the...
It's a very specific situation, but yes.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying.
I mean, he got a good end to it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
In the end, he ended up becoming the mascot.
Not only the mascot, but he got a little exercise out of the deal, too. And he wasn't chained up in the backyard, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you think it was kind of a... kind of a cheesy sort of twist that the old man ended up being a baseball player and ended up actually being somebody who played with Babe Ruth?
Maybe not cheesy. It was definitely a cliche, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as soon as I saw the man open the door and they started walking in, I had the feeling that he was going to be something involved with the baseball. Because you had to wrap up the solution of the baseball being destroyed somehow. It had to have a happy ending in a way, you know?
No, I agree. Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think that the fact that he, quote-unquote, went blind because he got hit in the head with the ball, that's just a horrible, horrible irony. And then he sits there all day long. I mean, what's he doing?
You know? And how he makes the comparison between himself and Babe Ruth by saying he hit just as good as Babe Ruth, but, you know, he would have been better if he had not gone blind.
Yeah, if he hadn't gone blind, he would have been the one everybody would be clamoring about.
That sounds like everybody who's ever done anything is like, if they would have put me in, I would have been the high school star of the football team.
I was once an adventurer like you. Until I took an arrow to the knee.
Go back to the very first podcast.
Yeah.
Well, all right, sure. Yeah. But I don't know. Okay, so this is definitely a genre film. This is definitely a kid's movie. But it has a broader appeal. And it is a Disney film. You know,
Was it Disney?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was 20th Century Fox before Disney bought it.
Okay, but it is a Disney-type film. Let's put it that way. Now that Disney owns it, though, it is on the Disney Plus. So that's where I watched it, was Disney Plus. So.
Oh.
But, yeah, it again, a good example of that kind of feel-good kids film where you could probably, as a parent, put this on and not worry about your kids, you know, you know, seeing blood and gore and hearing swear words or anything like that. You know, I mean, let's be honest, the worst words that they said, I think maybe they might have said, well, I can't say it. I mean, you know, I want to say it.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And we'll teach your kids to go to the nearest pool and kiss the lifeguard. And it'll also teach you to try to sneak into people's backyards to retrieve baseballs by creating contraptions and messing with their dog.
Well, I have to admit, I kind of did that sort of thing as a kid, too. We would be chasing frisbees rather than baseballs, though.
We've all hit something. I've broken a window before. To a shed. That wasn't necessarily in the yard, but yeah, we've all done something like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. But this, you know, there were other movies that came out. Can you guys think of any other movies that might have been similar to this? There were a couple, actually, that came out around this time that were... I can think of a couple, but I'm not going to say it. I want you guys to rack your brain. Uh-huh. Let's see what we can come up with. There was another one that had the character, the chubby kid, the redhead in this one. What was his character's name again? I can't remember. Hambino. Yes,
The great Hambino.
Yeah, the great Hambino as he ended up. Yeah. But so he was in a movie called Heavyweights.
Oh.
Which was a soccer film, I believe.
He was also in Boy Meets World for like an episode.
Was he?
Yeah, he was in, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was also, I want to say around that time, we had like the Mighty Ducks came out.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, when did the movie, this, for some reason, just the group of friends in general kind of gives me a similar vibe to The Body?
The what?
You mean Stand By Me?
Oh, my bad. Yeah, Stand By Me.
Yeah, Body was the actual name of the film, or the book.
Yeah,
but,
when did that come out?
Stand By Me was around this time, actually, actually a little before that, because Will Wheaton was one of the main characters in that one, and he then, after he did Stand By Me, he went directly into Star Trek The Next Generation as Wesley Crusher, and mm-hmm. that started his career, so it was even a little before this. It was in the 80s itself. But there was, like, movies like, you know, The Mighty Ducks, there was The Rookie, there was Angels in the Outfield.
Ooh, Angels in the Outfield, I remember that.
Yeah.
I was just about to mention that one,
To mention that one? Okay, yeah. But then there's also, I don't know, have you guys seen the movie Holes?
Yes. Yes.
Uh-huh. That was a cool movie.
It was, And it was a good book, too. It was a really good book. It was a good book. But those are all very similar sort of movies, and they all came out right around the same time as The Sandlot. My personal opinion is I think The Sandlot did it the best. I know there are a lot of people who like the idea of, you know, Angels in the Outfield or the Mighty Ducks, the first one, but I think Sandlot did it best. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Have you seen many of these others? I mean, Holes was awesome.
I've seen Holes.
Yeah.
I've seen Holes, I really Angels in the Outfield, and Mighty Ducks, but I would need to rewatch them to get the feel of them again and see how they executed compared to Sandlot.
I think out of those three, I've only seen Holes. I know by heart the commercial for Angels in the Outfield, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of an odd thing to know by heart, Xavier, but that's okay.
It's because it is one of my brother's favorite trailers, and he would play it over and over again.
I see. Okay. Very good. Yeah. Very good. I gotcha. No problem.
But I think between Holes and The Sandlot, I think The Sandlot did it a lot better than Holes.
Okay.
Because the way Holes did it was, you know, this kid gets framed for stealing.
Right. It was different. Well, they had kind of this was Sandlot was a buddy film, Holes was a prison film.
Yeah,
it was a rated G prison film, you know, and because it's like the Shawshank Redemption ran through you know,
a G rated filter.
That's exactly right.
When did the newer version, not the older version, the newer version of the film? It's the group of kids who have the club and it's the No Girls Allowed.
Little Rascals.
When did the
that new was that, around that time as
that
well?
That one was
too.
Really good. That similar vibe.
Yeah.
I
That's a good competitor. Yeah, that was a good comparison as well, definitely. Mm-hmm. But I think that these sort of this sort of genre type film where the kids are the stars and they leave the parental units in the sidelines, I like that a lot because it really leads a lot to humor. And kids are so strange and spontaneous. You just never know what you're going to get.
You can Charlie be Brown where you never know what the adults are saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah, screenwriters can be much more creative when they're coming with the problems and solutions to those problems if they're using kids as the main characters.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, another perfect example is Home Alone.
Oh sure. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't you mean the prequel series to Saw?
Dang it, Dean. Also, when you use kids, it also there's this kind of thing with society where people like to they actually open up to kids, like they want to give them the benefit of the doubt, kids, because they're young and they're like most of the time we'll sit around and we'll be like, ah, everybody else sucks around me, the world, everybody's mean. But sometimes when you see like specifically like a baby or a kid, you give them a chance,
yeah,
right, and you can like you're kind of like, oh, let's see what they do, maybe they'll develop into something cool, and you kind of open yourself up to their kind of world and point of view.
Okay, I suppose almost. I could see that. Yeah, all right, I get that.
There's a little bit of that there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you have any comments about like the music? There wasn't really what I would call a solid soundtrack.
No, it was more like a song separately.
It was a collection of different music, and again, I think probably my favorite one out of it was Green Onions, but.
It was kind of like how 2001 A Space Odyssey took all the classical pieces and they put them in there. They didn't necessarily have a soundtrack, but they put in specific pieces. They did that, but with mid-1900s style music.
Right. One of the brilliant things about that, though, is now that music is almost exclusively associated with 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So while Stanley Kubrick did not necessarily intentionally do that, it has become that.
Someone actually wrote a score. And then because you know how they do like temp tracks?
Oh, yeah.
So basically he fell in love with a temp track. And then he basically said to the whole score that someone had composed, nah, I'm going to use these. Which, I mean, I really like the pieces, obviously. I probably like them better than... I don't regret it, but at the same time, I feel bad for that composer.
A little bit, but again...
But in the long run, it was a good choice.
Yeah, I don't know. So the music choices definitely, I think, added to the feel of the film. You know, that kind of summery, kind of carefree, you know, you were just kind of out there sort of thing. But, you know, you look at the other films that we mentioned, like Stand By Me. Stand By Me had a great soundtrack, and it was all music from the late 1950s, early 1960s. And it's that same sort of feeling. And, I'm trying to even spit it out. I can't even remember what I was going to say. So, yeah, anyway, about the soundtrack. My brain froze.
It just does exactly what you're talking about. It's a very stylistic choice, and it's the same exact vibe. It's summer. It's the whole your kids, mid-1900s. Let's see how we can portray that through the popular culture, because that's most likely what those type of that's what those type of kids are. They're kids that would have been into that type of music at the time.
Definitely.
That's how they're portrayed in the movie. So it just works out that way.
And in the pure and this movie in particular, and here's some details about it. Let's see. The opening weekend that it opened in April of 1993, that was April 11th, 1993, it made $4,900,000.
Oh.
Which for an early summer film, that's pretty awesome. $4 million was pretty good. It grossed cumulative worldwide $34 million. So it made a pretty good chunk of what it was going to make that first weekend that it opened, which is pretty impressive.
What was the budget for the film?
See, now that that's an excellent question. I want to say probably a film like this was probably the budget wasn't much over $2 million.
I was reading about the film actually before I came in here, and. One of the things that I read was the entire film was recorded in about 42, 43 days.
So
it did not take long at all.
No. And with films like this in particular, they don't need a whole lot of time because they're number one, they're using locations that are almost, they don't have to build anything. They're just there, you know? What do you need for a sandlot? Well, we need an open area with a bunch of dirt.
And a treehouse.
You know, the treehouse they probably had to build, but the rest of it was probably existing structures that they just, you know, used for the film. The pool, it was an outdoor pool. That was just simply a neighborhood pool that they used. And so, so a lot of that really helps to, you know, helps to flesh the film out and make it seem a little more real, which, you know, with green screen and everything else today, we wonder how the actors even interact with their surroundings and make it believable. But in a movie like this with little kids, which also with little kids, it makes it just that much easier to do. So,
yeah.
Well, I was also reading about when they were recording it, the weather worked out for them too. Because you remember that scene where it was so hot they all had to go home?
Yeah.
That was actually recorded on a day where it almost reached 110 degrees.
That's awesome.
I know.
That is awesome. Because for little kids, that makes it perfect for them because they don't even have to act.
Put them in through torture and you'll get a real experience.
You get a real, you get real whining and coming out of those kids.
I don't remember which actor it was, but one of the actors was so heat exhausted that while they were recording, they were running, they ran into the cameraman.
Nice.
Dang kids.
Here's a little trivia from this. This is interesting. I'm looking at some trivia on IMDb. When Squints went to kiss Wendy, the director said to Squint's character, "Keep your tongue in your mouth."
So was he like that in real life then is what the question begs.
You know what? I think a lot of child actors are kind of precocious anyway.
He was a 13-year-old kid. Can you blame him?
No. Wendy was cute. I can't, you know, I mean, yeah, at that age, I would have chased after her.
15.
What?
He clarified at that age.
I said at that age.
I know, we were just messing with you.
Jeez.
We're sitting here counting.
I'm old, but I'm not pervy.
I think that's a little more than pervy. If it were like that, we're not saying it is.
Well, anyways.
You're off the hook,
you don't
Mr.
have
Randolph.
A very high opinion of me, do you?
To be fair, Mr. Randolph, didn't you say that last week that this came out around the time of your teenage years?
Yeah. I was actually, in 1993, I was 22 years old.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, almost 23. I would have been 23 in May. So, but yeah. It was a little after my teenage years. So, yeah, Wendy still would have been a little young for me. But that's okay. Yeah, go ahead. Giggle. Giggle all you want. Anyway. So, you know, the reviews for this film, obviously, people love this film. I haven't seen a bad review for this film. And as far as the things that have come out of it, obviously, You're Killing Me, Smalls. It's still in our nomenclature today. I know in my own family, the forever.
Oh, my gosh.
Ever.
Well, yeah, my family too.
I loved that. That's how they did those scenes. They did not give them real voices. They just had the kid. That was perfect.
Yeah.
It's kind of what they did in Ant-Man, too.
Oh, yeah.
I love that stuff. Yeah. That's great.
But, no, that's, you know, when somebody, you know, we ask, well, what are you guys, how long are you guys going to take, you know, and somebody always goes, forever, really overly exaggerated. So, but it's still around almost 30 years later. Mm-hmm. And wow, it's hard to believe that it's almost 30 years later. I mean, we're just, oh, and those kids, they really, some of them did not age well at all.
No.
I mean, there are a couple who are pretty decent looking still, but most of them, no.
Some of them faded into obscurity.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to be that way, but still. Like the kid who played Smalls, let's have a look at him. He aged fairly well.
What about his sweetheart, Wendy?
Wendy Peppercorn. Okay,
that was not Smalls.
That was Squints.
Oh, I wasn't talking about the characters in the film.
Oh. Mm. Let's see who played Wendy. There we go. Wendy Peppercorn. Marley Shelton played her. Let's see how she turned
out. Never heard that name.
Oh.
Did she keep acting?
Yes. She was in Planet Terror. She was in Never Been Kissed. She was in Bubble Boy, Uptown Girls. She was in Ride or Die in 2019, which was a TV movie. She's done a lot of TV stuff since that time.
How old is she now then?
Let's see. I can crush on her a little bit now. She's older.
Yes, you can.
Oh, well, she was born in 74.
Oh,
so
she's like 40 something.
I was born in 71. So there's not that much age difference there.
Remember when I said she was in her late teenage years?
Okay, the character was
portrayed in her late teenage years.
All right, you guys are just awful. Especially you, Nate.
Which one?
You.
No, him.
No, it's him.
No, you.
Nate's a piece of crap.
What's that?
Nate's a piece of crap.
Okay, fair enough, Kira. You know, she doesn't say a whole lot, but when she does, it's pearls of wisdom.
It's comedy gold.
It's comedy gold.
That's what I'm here for.
All right.
She'll be here all week.
She'll be here all week. Dun-dun-dun. All right, let's get some final thoughts about the movie. Kieran, go.
All right. So I have not seen this movie in years, but I get the basic plot of it. Overall, it's a pretty good summertime feel-good movie. You know, I can appreciate it. Good sense of nostalgia, especially if you're from around that time period. And, it's a pretty good movie. You're welcome.
Thank you, Kieran.
So the way you said it was great. It's like, it's just a little summertime feel-good movie. Yeah.
All right, Xavier.
I agree with Kieran. It is a great movie. Definitely great with nostalgia. I feel that if you want to watch a movie that isn't really too focused on driving the story forward and just wants to, be like a lighthearted film, this would be the best movie for that.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a just, if you wanted just kind of a chuckle and a lighthearted film, this is a good one to put on, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Eric, what do you think?
Really good movie.
Okay. There you go, leave it there.
Thank you for your input.
So like I mentioned before, I probably have when I was younger, watched movies older than 2000. I just didn't realize the release date, but I really enjoyed it because I have like that slight childish humor.
And,
it was a really humorous movie and I really enjoyed it.
Okay, good. Good. Nate?
I agree with that. I enjoyed the movie as well. Very lighthearted. I love the way it sort of, everyone can relate to Smalls in a way because we've all been in a position where we've had to make new friends, new setting, and sometimes we have to fit in by doing things we're not used to, and we have to lie about knowing things.
Yep. I can understand
that. What are you implying, Nate?
I don't know what you're talking about. I just remember he had a list. It was never really developed throughout the film, but they introduced the list of baseball things to remember.
Right.
Yeah. And the first one was The Great Bambino.
Right. And he just was clueless.
Exactly. He never realized they were Babe Ruth and the Bambino
were the same person. Same animal. Yeah.
So, you got to do what you got to do to fit in, make new friends. So
this is true.
Overall, I enjoyed the movie.
All right, very good. Nate squared.
So I'm Nate number two. Okay.
Well, you're the one who said you were number. You said you were number two, so
you were also Nate. The one who said that Stuart and Chad were cliche names.
They are cliche names. Think about it. There's nothing wrong with your name.
How many people do you know named Stuart except for Mr. Randolph?
Exactly.
I only know Mr. Randolph as a Stuart.
It's a fine name, but also, I'm not getting into this right now.
Keep digging.
Yep.
Keep digging. Anyway, your final thoughts on the movie, Nate Squared?
You're in your 20s. Okay. So I thought it was okay.
This will be the last time Nate will be seen
or
heard.
I I think it's a good movie. I don't think it's like great, but I kind of like it. It's okay.
You guys remember at the end of the film where they told where everybody was, you know, after the story was over with?
Fade away.
You know, if we were to go, if we were going around the room, we said Kieran is, you know, president of the United States. Xavier went on to become a prominent physicist. Eric went on to become a radio host in New York City. Nate went on to be a famous, I don't even know what you'd be famous for.
Computer scientist.
Yeah, there you go, computer scientist. And Nate Squared was never heard from again.
Good. Try me.
Anyway. All right, guys, we need to decide on what we're going to do next time. What do we think? Do we have any ideas?
I have a movie suggestion.
Go for it.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, that is Bueller.
That is probably one of my favorite movies. So.
Yes.
I love that movie.
I'm good. Have you seen that one, Eric?
Probably not.
No, okay. So good. You'll love
it. I'll give it a watch either
way. It's really good. Do you have any feedback on that one, Nate, too?
I'm really tired from drinking this thing, and I'm starting to crash. Besides that, Ferris Bueller's good. I had another movie in mind. I don't remember what it is, though, so we'll probably just stick with that.
All right. I think Ferris Bueller's Day Off is the way to go for next week.
Yeah,
so, ladies and gentlemen, if you enjoyed our podcast, please make sure that you come back next week with us and give a listen to Just Another Movie podcast. We will be reviewing and talking about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, as well as throwing in our own special flair. Again, if you have a movie that you would like us to review, I would urge you to send me, Mr. Randolph, an email at Now I'm over here watching Nate and screwing up. It's srandolph@streeterhs.org. That's srandolph@streeterhs.org. Send me the movie that you would like us to review, and we will put it on a list, and we will get to it, definitely.
Or if you don't trust Mr. Randolph, send it to me, Nathaniel, 20049 at students.streeterhs.org. Please make sure you give us your movie suggestions. Thank you very much. I know I'm here every week. Thank you. I know you all love me. Mr. Randolph, you'll get them next time.
So where are we burying him?
They'll never know. I want to thank all of you once again for joining us for Just Another Movie podcast on this Wednesday, March 4th, 2020. I hope you have a wonderful week, and we will see you all next time.